check-in on the Serta Counting Sheep.
Why aren't we counting anymore?
Well, the all-new Serta Perfect Sleeper has the Q4 support system that helps relieve aches and back pain.
We'll never get counted again!
Nope.
Save this Memorial Day. Shop at a retailer near you.
The truth of the matter is you can't turn it off. And the moment you stop taking care of yourself, that's when things become dangerous.
The Chronic Truth Podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. The views expressed by our guests are their personal opinions and do not constitute medical advice. While we share experiences and strategies related to health, neither the host nor the guest are acting as licensed medical professionals unless explicitly stated. Always consult your physician or qualified healthcare provider before making any changes to your treatment plan. Listeners assume all risks associated with implementing any information discussed on this show.
Good evening and welcome to the Chronic Truth Podcast. I'm Kimberly Nash. Tonight, we are joined by Chelsea Rice. Diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 25, Chelsea faced a life-changing complication when he lost the vision in one eye due to diabetic retinopathy. Instead of letting that define him, he turned his experience into advocacy using humor and storytelling to break the stigma and build a community. From speaking on international stages and representing DDoC voices, Chelsea is changing the conversation around diabetes one laugh and one truth at a time. Welcome, Chelsea.
Thank you.
I will say this is my first diabetic interview, so I am super excited.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I appreciate you having me, Kimberly.
Yes. Tell us a little bit what started at 25 and how that all became.
Well, as far as my diagnosis, it started just like most other diabetes diagnosis stories. I'd started having the symptoms of diabetes, the constant thirst, frequent urination, lethargic, just rapid weight loss. And so it basically just got to the point to where, honestly, I didn't really understand what was going on with my body at the time. It had just turned out that my roommate at the time had set up an appointment with me for a urologist because I had been, just having the frequent urination. And so he thought I may have been having, possibly some kidney issues, things of that nature. And so it was at the urologist he diagnosed me as being type 1. And then I just went right into the hospital for a week for treatment and training. The training itself or the education wasn't really much. Like I say, it was just a week. I'm pretty sure I didn't have a diabetes educator at the time, no nutritionist, anything of that nature. It was just basically a lot of documents, booklets or whatever, and very little time spent with me as far as showing me more about the condition that I had. So this was the late 80s, maybe 88, 89 when I was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And it just got to the point that I really didn't have a community until the mid-2000s, once social media really became a part of, I guess, my life in a sense, because up until that point, I hadn't met anyone that had diabetes or had known anyone. My grandmother had it. She was possibly type 2 that I knew of, but that was about the most that I even known about diabetes. So it was really just a learning experience for all those several years until I actually found a community. And of course, my condition had changed. You start off, a lot of people call it the honeymoon effect, where you start off with a smaller dose of insulin or lower doses of your medications. And then it kind of gradually changes from there as you advance in having the condition. And so I started out with no technology. Now I'm using current technologies, CGMs, pumps, things of that nature. So most of that, I didn't get introduced to that until the mid-2000s. So up until that point, I was pretty much on my own. Now, around 2005 is when I had started experiencing issues with my eyes, which led to the vision loss in my right eye.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty common, correct, with diabetes at some point?
Not necessarily. It's a complication that can happen. It's not most of the complications they vary from patient to patient. Most patients don't have vision loss. They may have issues with neuropathy, nerve damage. I never really had any issues with nerve damage, but I know other patients that have. So it's kind of a, no diagnosis is the same and no complication diagnosis is the same. It was just, that was the the complication that I had, gotten. And so from there, it just became an issue with trying to learn how to navigate with that vision loss. And I was still able to drive, still able to work, but having to navigate your way through things such as FMLA or your short-term disability, all of those things, those just came, was basically on-the-job training, so to speak, throughout the year. So I think with my diagnosis happening so early in life in a time where there wasn't a lot of, where there was hardly any technology at the time, mine was a different case. And I'm not alone as far as folks living with type 1 diabetes over 30 years. I mean, I know a friend of mine has had it for over 46 years.
Wow.
So, of course, he's a little older than I am, but he basically started out the same way, little to no technology. But it was just something we had to grow into and live through and get to that point to where we can, now we can take care of ourselves with, the technology and with the community that we've discovered throughout the years.
And to help those that are newly diagnosed now, it's like a bigger type of a community to help people learn about it. Is that correct?
Right, right. It's just, that's one of the things that I suggest to anyone that's newly diagnosed is to seek out a community. Mostly anyone that's newly diagnosed now, they have communities that are readily available to them, of course, through social media, but don't feel you can't speak to your healthcare physician about what resources that they may know of. Now, oftentimes the healthcare physicians don't know because oftentimes the healthcare professionals aren't part of these communities. They're basically utilizing their skills as a professional to help you treat your diabetes. They're not so much connected to the community, which I'd like to see more of them get connected in the community, because unless they understand what we're dealing with as patients, they can have a better understanding of how they can work with patients in their profession. When right. they have the patients in their office, if they understand what they're dealing with outside that office, I think it could benefit them as far as like the way they treat their patients.
Mm-hmm. When you got notification that you were, diagnosed with diabetes, and you mentioned did they put everyone in the hospital for a week to train them, or was it your condition was a little bit more severe that they needed to regulate that?
Yeah, I don't think mine was any different. I think it just really comes with, I think it really comes down to who your doctor is. I mean, I've heard of people being in the hospital less. If the diagnosis is, I guess, more severe, if my blood sugar was around 500, but I didn't have any episodes where I'd lost consciousness or anything like that. There are some patients who have lost consciousness that ended up in the hospital for a much longer time, whether it be the dehydration or they were just on an insulin drip or, something to help them bring their sugar back into range. So there are more severe cases of diagnosis than others. It just basically comes down to, I guess, how your condition really is at the time of diagnosis, depending on how long you could possibly end up in the hospital.
Now, did they sit you down and give you like a pamphlet or some sort of a booklet showing what you could eat, not eat, what's good for you, what's not? Did they do any of that sort of training?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't consider it training. I mean, they didn't really spend a great deal of time talking to me about my condition. It was just more or less, like I said, they gave me some pamphlets to read or whatever, but of course there was no internet that I could do any research on my own. So it was just, I was kind of left in the dark. And it seemed like kind of the dark ages, but this is just, the actual truth of the matter is that some patients actually go through that today. They aren't provided the, a map to these resources that they can locate online. And it really comes down to a lot of patients end up going seeking education through social media, through the internet, through whether it be YouTube or whatever, because they didn't receive that type of information. And again, that just falls on who you're, who the people are in your life that are actually providing you your...
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Treatment.
You've turned a very personal and difficult health journey into something that educates and empowers others. What has been that moment that pushed you from surviving to speaking out about it?
I think it came from more or less being around other patients, or, you know, whether it's sharing spaces with them or just, you know, being in these communities online or, you know, face-to-face communities that led me to believe that, you know, there's something else that I need to be doing with this as opposed to just going through the motions and just making it through with this condition. It's just the way I was wired. I don't know whether I was wired to help others. It was just, there had to have been something on the other side of this that I could do as opposed to just being a patient and just being a person navigating through this, you know, negativity. And I wanted to do something in spite of the condition that I was, you know, that I'm dealing with.
Diabetes in the workplace is something that many do not talk about. I believe there are some big misconceptions in the workplace. How can we as fellow coworkers or, you know, I guess supervisors, how can we better support those living with it?
I think it really comes down to being realistic and understanding the fact that if you live with where you work, you're not the only person there that doesn't have a condition. There are people there that have various health conditions that they may not talk about. And when there's no support in the workplace, they're just basically going to decide, well, I'm not going to, you know, follow up with this. I'm just going to possibly just keep it to myself and just hope and pray for the best. But when someone is open about it, I think there needs to be some sort of process to where these, if you're in leadership, then you need to lead. You need to be able to support the people who are the support your subordinates. If you can't lead, then why are you in the position? You're obviously just there to draw an extra paycheck and make more than someone else. They're not working within the system to help them not be afraid of being open about it. Now, because of ADA regulations, employees aren't required to divulge their conditions. But me, I never had a problem with divulging because my mindset is I need to let someone know in case I may need help.
And with that said, what would be some examples for our listeners that a person with diabetes may struggle with during the day that we that don't have it can kind of be on the watch for?
If they're actually very anxious, or, you know, maybe if they have they start get the shakes, or they start sweating, they may have a low blood sugar. If they're starting to become lethargic and their speech becomes slurred, things of that nature. Because dealing with diabetes, well, basically any type of health-related stigma in the workplace is extremely dangerous, because this is where this is all stemming from. When you have employees with chronic illness or invisible illnesses to where they don't feel that they can actually talk to anyone about it, or they don't feel they can trust, that's based out of stigma that they're afraid of being cast upon them. If they've heard someone tell some off-color joke about breast cancer or any type of cancer or irritable bowel disease or eczema or diabetes, things of that nature, those are the type of things that make people uncomfortable and they don't feel that they can actually seek the help that they need, and they end up suffering in silence.
What is something to help them that I could do immediately.
Let's check in on the Serta counting sheep.
Why aren't we counting anymore?
Well, the all-new Serta Perfect Sleeper has the Q4 support system that helps relieve aches and back pain.
We'll never get counted again!
Nope.
Save this Memorial Day. Shop at a retailer near you.
Well, you probably want to check with what resources you have in your workplace. Like I said, the one where I work is very large, so we have a wellness center.
Okay.
And you treat it, honestly, in a situation like that, you would treat it like any other emergency situation that you would come across in your workplace and treat it however you guys are trained to treat any type of, say, first aid situation. If it's someone you need to contact, if there's a specific person that you need to contact, if you need to call security so they can find, you know, get in contact and get an ambulance, whichever, things of that nature. So you basically follow whatever protocol that you have in your workplace in any type of emergency situation. And I think the main thing is that falls under an emergency situation. Don't treat that like, well, they're just sick or whatever. That still falls under an emergency situation. And it shouldn't be like given a side eye or just blown off because that's just something they have to go through or whatever. No, that time can lead to something very dangerous, whether they're having a low blood sugar or a high blood sugar. That time between you noticing it and them getting them help can oftentimes mean life. In some cases, it can mean life or death.
This is a very serious chronic health condition, and it can be, like you said, fatal. So we want to be proactive in reacting to things that we see and getting our coworker or even a family member, a friend, help as soon as we start seeing odd behavior. What role does the community play in managing chronic illness, and why is this so important for people to start getting involved?
Well, when I say seek a community, I mean, it really comes down to seeking other folks who share your condition, because those are the folks that you can rely on to oftentimes ask questions or at least to be around people who understand. Because being isolated is very difficult for someone with a chronic illness, because unless they're able to relate to someone else about that, that isolation can be very heavy at times, to where you become complacent and to the point you don't want to take better care of yourself, because you become, there's a term we like to use, is diabetes burnout, which really just comes down to, you know, you're just tired of the process of going to the doctor and then just having bad news. And then all these different things that just start to pile on to where you don't want to be diabetic for a day. You know, you just want to just turn it off, so to speak. But the truth of the matter is you can't turn it off. And the moment you stop taking care of yourself, that's when things become dangerous. And so that's where a community can help, because you have the ability to bounce these emotions off someone else who's been there. And it can mean a lot. It meant a lot to me. Especially when it came to the point where I lost my vision and I was completely isolated then and having no idea what to do with that or what I could possibly do in that type of situation. So it's really just comes down to being able to find a support group in some way, form, or fashion. And there's some pitfalls in finding community these days, but it just takes a bit to, you know, really do the work to search for a community that you can trust.
Yes. And I will add to that one, because when I first was diagnosed with end stage liver disease, I joined some support groups and it was difficult. The first ones I joined, it was very negative. A lot of gloom and doom. You have to seek out something that's encouraging and offering you a powerful tool to live with a chronic health condition. I mean, the diagnosis itself is negative. You don't want to keep feeding your mind, because what we feed our mind, our body's going to react.
The online community is oftentimes a bit of a minefield when it comes to finding community, specifically when it comes to a health condition. What happens is, and you find it in the same thing in support groups that you may meet face to face, you're dealing with people. And even though you get a room full or a chat room full of people that all share the same condition, they're all still different people, and they bring their own personal idiosyncrasies into the condition. So you'll find people who are sexist, that are racist, that are homophobic. They'll bring all of that into the support. And those are the mind, I guess the thorns in the rosebush type of things you have to be wary of. Because if you get in a situation where, say, if you're in a Facebook support group, you have to be mindful of the conversations. If the conversations start going in a direction that you don't appreciate, or there's certain people that are extremely toxic, get out.
Yep, I agree.
And honestly, and a lot of people probably say, well, why didn't fucking Facebook do something about that? They kind of did at one point. There used to be a lot of supposedly support groups for these different conditions. And what it started happening is they just started falling off. They just started disappearing. And I think Facebook has started shutting a lot of these groups down because they just became so toxic and negative. So I oftentimes let folks know when you're going looking for groups on that, or those types of support groups, just be mindful of what you're getting into and just pay attention to the direction, because the people who are supposed to be the admins, oftentimes they may not have enough time to vet these people that are coming into these groups.
Especially if they're large.
Yeah, because it's so large and they can't keep up with what's going on. And sometimes and then you got some admins that are just extremely on top of it, whether to the point where they start kicking people out for all the little things, you know, over misunderstandings. What if it is fault and you kicked them out? And it's like, what?
What would you give someone that's newly diagnosed with diabetes? What kind of tools would you give them to start with? Where do they start? If it was, say, I just got the diagnosis today, what would you offer me?
I'd tell you to basically pay a lot of attention to what your physician is telling you. And if he's not telling you what you feel is enough, then you just have to really ask more questions. There's no crime in looking up information and then going back to him to ask him, look, hey, I read something about this. What do you think about this? Or I read something about this particular pump or this particular treatment. What do you think about this? Because that's what you hired him for. And so I would save a lot of the more treatment questions to the physicians or any other, or a nurse practitioner or something like that. I wouldn't spend a lot of time asking those types of questions in the support groups because.
Yes.
I wouldn't, because again, you're dealing with people and everyone has their own personal treatment. What works for them may not work for you. They may have broken off the path of the guidance by the healthcare professional and just went off on their own. So you don't want to just go follow somebody just because they did. That's them. Let them do that. Yes. But you have to own your own condition and then be in charge of your own condition, and don't follow someone just because they did a certain thing, or don't let them guide you into following them just because they think you should be doing what they do. That's another thing altogether about these online communities and these online personalities, so to speak, who, you know, live with these conditions and they manage it in a certain way, and they want to, even when they're not trying to sell you something, they're still trying to convince you that their way is a certain way, and it's like.
Or that they know more than you, or know more than the Joe Blow down the community. Yeah, that's a tough one. So that's very good advice. How can my listeners get in touch with you, or are you on any platforms that we can share on this channel?
Yeah, you can seek me out. It's I'm mostly on Instagram, where I can be found by, you know, mostly 81. I'm under at Type1Comedian. That's TYPE, the number one. Comedian. And that's usually where you can find me on Instagram the most. My Facebook is just more like kind of personal stuff. And so I've been on there since like 07. So it's pretty convoluted. I don't know if anybody can even find me on there at all. And I'm working on eventually starting getting my YouTube presence moving again and trying to post more videos. And I'm also working to try and build my LinkedIn page as well. LinkedIn has gotten to be, it's not so much even about, you know, employment anymore. There's a lot of advocates from different health conditions on LinkedIn using that platform for their advocacy. And so it's, that's another thing that I'm going to be working on next.
Beautiful. Well, this has been such a pleasure having you on. Your voice is being a light in a community that really needs to hear it. I thank you, and I'm so honored to have you on the show. For my listeners, if this has impacted you in any way, I encourage you to leave a comment. Also, go to our website, chronictruthpodcast.com, and share your story and share how this has impacted you. And until next week, not without a fight.
Let's check in on the Serta counting sheep.
Why aren't we counting anymore?
Well, the all-new Serta Perfect Sleeper has the Q4 support system that helps relieve aches and back pain.
We'll never get counted again!
Nope.
Save this Memorial Day. Shop at a retailer near you.